Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Stephen Hill, who is a writer, columnist, and political professional. His books include 10 Steps to Repair American Democracy, Fixing Elections, The Failure of America's Winner-Take-All Politics, and Whose Vote Counts, written with his friend Rob Ritchie, with whom he founded Fair Vote, an organization dedicated to reforming our elections to respect every vote and every voice through bold approaches to increase voter turnout, meaningful ballot choices, and fair representation. He has an article at The Nation, The Blue State Strategy for Progressive Renewal. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephen Hill.
Thank you, Ian. It's good to be here.
So I think it's pretty clear, isn't it, Stephen, that the Republicans have a pretty long strategy here. And with Karl Rove pretty much the spear carrier, they caught the Democrats by surprise in 2010 through a tremendous amount of funding and coordination with big groups like the American Petroleum Institute. They ran Tea Party and conservatives in the swing states, captured the legislatures and the governorships in these swing states, and then immediately enacted ALEC and this voter suppression legislation, which was designed to affect the 2012 elections that we're now in. Do you think they're going to pull it off? I mean, with a combination of voter suppression and unlimited money?
Well, you know, it really depends on how close the election is in general. I mean, even with all the attempts they're doing at voter suppression, the reality is you don't affect that many votes. But if the election is close enough, like it was in 2000 in Florida, where George Bush in the official tally beat Al Gore by 537 votes out of some, 20 million voters, then these sorts of efforts can pay off. So their strategy is basically a hedging strategy. If it's extremely close, they're hoping these sorts of strategies might make the difference in who actually wins. That's what they're hoping to do.
So in terms of that possibility in this election, do you think that the Green Party could help elect Romney? I mean, what are they polling at now? They've sort of gone down in numbers since Nader, haven't they?
Yes, the Green Party's numbers are certainly lower than they were when Ralph Nader ran in 2000 and even in 2004. But there again, it's all dependent on how close the election is. I mean, the presence of Greens, the presence of these voter suppression tactics, they don't affect ultimately how close the election is. They will have an impact if the election is extremely close, like it was in 2000 or even 2004 in Ohio. And keep in mind that this is not a national election per se, because we already can tell you who's going to win about 40, maybe even 43 of the states. It's going to come down to just a handful of battleground states, and among the seven battleground states, the two most important are going to be Ohio and Florida, as they were in 2004 and as they were in 2000. So, you know, that's where the battle is going to be fought, and that's where either the presence of a Green candidate or the voter suppression tactics could potentially make a difference if it's close enough. I mean, when an election is being decided by 537 votes, if the Green Party candidate gets 0.1% of the vote, that could be enough to pull sufficient votes away from the Democratic candidate to throw the election to the Republican. There are other minor party candidates running as well, including a Libertarian Party candidate. You know, this has worked in the other direction. There are several seats in the U.S. Senate were won by Democrats because a Libertarian Party candidate, looks like pulled enough votes from the Republican candidate to have the Democrat get elected. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. That's going to be the interesting thing.
Well, of course, Stephen Hill, you have worked against this anomaly where in 2000 environmentalists voted for an environmentalist, Ralph Nader, to help defeat another environmentalist, Al Gore, and elect an anti-environmentalist, George W. Bush. And if we had instant runoff voting, which you've worked to get in San Francisco, Oakland, and Minneapolis, and if that were nationwide, the problem wouldn't exist in the first place, would it?
No, it wouldn't. So that would allow voters to rank a first, second, and third choice. And the way it works is if your first choice can't win, so let's say you voted for Ralph Nader, or this year Jill Stein for Green Party. If Jill can't win, then your vote goes to your second choice as your backup choice. It's like having a runoff election, but doing it all in a single vote. And so that would allow the true majority winner to emerge without all these accusations of spoilers and split votes and all these things that have been troubling the presidential elections as well as many other elections for quite a few years. I mean, you know, the reality is if we'd used instant runoff voting in the 2000 presidential election in Florida, the 10,000 or so Ralph Nader voters, excuse me, I think he had like 100,000 voters. Yeah, it was close to 100,000 voters. 90,000, they would have the option of ranking a second choice. And tens of thousands of them would have put Al Gore, and Al Gore would have been the recipient of those runoff votes, and he would have won Florida and hence the presidential election. So these are the sorts of methods that really are, you know, they're just better, more efficient methods for determining the true will of the voters. And the methods we're using now are actually make it possible for the candidate that doesn't have the most support to win. And, you know, it's just kind of strange that we continue to use these antiquated methods. I mean, other places around the world, like Australia and Ireland, that are using these ranked ballot methods, I mean, they come here and they think, my God, why would you use a method that makes it possible for the candidate that has the least amount of support to win? That's not what democracy is supposed to be about. And yet here in the United States, we continue to use these old antiquated methods that produce the wrong winners.
Again, I'm speaking with Stephen Hill, who's a writer, columnist, and political professional. His books include 10 Steps to Repair American Democracy, Fixing Elections, The Failure of America's Winner-Take-All Politics, and Whose Vote Counts. He has an article at The Nation, The Blue State Strategy for Progressive Renewal. So given that the Republicans are trying to both buy the vote and steal the vote in 2012, your article at The Nation, Stephen Hill, argues that there's an awful lot of things that the Democrats could have done and still could do to level the playing field.
Right. Well, because what we hear a lot from Democrats, progressives, and Greens, and others is that, you know, the Republicans control the House, and so it's really hard for a Democrat to get anything through that House because the Republicans won't cooperate, so the federal level is completely paralyzed. And, you know, there's been a lot of frustration with Obama that he wasn't sufficiently able to get things moving even when he had control of the Congress. And so there's this sort of sense now that we're stuck playing defense, fighting these voter suppression efforts, fighting against the Koch brothers. And the point of the article that I wrote for The Nation is that there are actually almost a dozen states right now that have what I call the trifecta. They have a Democratic governor, and they have Democrats controlling both houses of the state legislature. And in those states, there are no obstructionist Republicans, there's no filibuster, there's no Fox News ditto heads that are preventing the Democrats from passing true progressive legislation. It's only Democrats that are stopping this from going forward in those states. And so the article sort of thinks out loud and says, okay, imagine if you were the Democratic governor of this state where you have a Democratic-controlled legislature, what would you pass? And then it goes through and it lists a number of important reforms that Democrats in these states should pass right away. And if they did that, they would become national models. So if it ever reaches a point where the federal government becomes, you know, not so much drowning in quicksand, these would become models that we could use at the federal level as well. And so some of the things I propose, for example, automatic voter registration. You know, you look at all the voter suppression efforts going on right now, and the fact of the matter is that, you know, the democratic norm around the world is not to have this kind of voluntary voter registration, you know, where you have to fill out this form and, you know, each side tries to keep the other side from getting their voters registered. The democratic norm is just simply automatic voter registration to get to 100% universal voter registration. The government takes responsibility for registering everybody. And the way they do that is they simply give everyone a unique identifier at some point in your life, like we have a Social Security number, and that becomes your voter ID number that follows you throughout your voting life. And they use that to register you no matter where you live, no matter who you are, what race, youth, age, anything, everyone is 100% registered. This is what Democrats could do at the state level, and there's nothing to prevent them from doing it. and yet they aren't doing it. So, I mean, really, it's not the Republicans' fault that their Democrats aren't pushing automatic voter registration in the states that they control. That's Democrats' fault. And, you know, I expect Republicans to do voter suppression. That's just, it's in their best interest. So that's what they do. But, you know, we need to quit blaming Republicans for what they're doing, instead put the pressure on Democrats to do the things that they can do to counteract that, like universal voter registration. Quit playing defense and play some offense for a change. That's the message of the article.
So, Stephen Hill, what you're talking about, of course, is the norm in all other established democracies around the world. Citizens are usually registered automatically when they reach the age of eligibility. And it's worth pointing out the states that the Democrats already control with the trifecta, that's the governorship and both legislatures, are California, Illinois, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Maryland, Washington, Arkansas, West Virginia, Hawaii, Delaware, and Vermont. So your argument basically is that there's an awful lot that they already have to work with. And if they started this fair method, which, you know, I'm always being astounded at how Americans have no concept of how rigged their democracy is from the get-go, with all of these impediments of registration, all of which are clearly designed to suppress the vote. That's the tradition. And, of course, from the days of the Founding Fathers, who only wanted white men of property to vote, the states have always controlled the process. So,
right. I mean, I think the way you put it is quite correct, Ian, that the, you know, we're looking a lot at the voter suppression that's going on in this election, the tactics that the Republicans and conservatives are using. But the reality is that the voter suppression has already happened, because they've already constructed the laws to make it hard to register. And so what they're doing is just adding on to the general voter suppression that's been going on for years and could easily be addressed by Democrats in these Democrat trifecta states like California. I mean, why is it that the Democrats in California and Governor Jerry Brown have not already passed this? And in fact, we had a bill in the state legislature, when I directed the political reform program at the New America Foundation in 2009, to bring universal voter registration, automatic voter registration to California. And the Republicans, of course, fought it fiercely. They called it un-American. Okay, I expect that. But the Democrats in the legislature didn't really embrace it. In fact, even the Secretary of State of California, Deborah Bowen, who's, you know, considered a progressive, she put the brakes on it. And so, you know, this is, the Democrats are doing this. This isn't Republicans. And that's what people have to realize, is that there are things Democrats could be doing right now in these different states. And I list a number of them in this article in The Nation. Automatic voter registration is just one of them. Proportional representation to more open up the political system. Democrats could be passing that at the state level in these states. Public financing of campaigns, free media time. That would counteract the terrible ruling known as Citizens United. Democrats could be doing that. And then I look at other areas beyond political reform. For example, feed-in tariffs, which were pioneered in Germany, which basically uses the free market to really boost alternative energy sources by making energy producers, they get paid by companies that transmit energy 3 to 4 times the amount for producing that energy through solar and wind power and other renewables than they get for conventional sources. And by doing this, you immediately create a market, and all sorts of investment pours into renewables. And this is what Germany and other countries in Europe have done. And as a result, Germany is now a world leader in solar and wind power, far more solar and wind power in Germany than there is in the United States, even though their country is much smaller than what we have here. So these are the sorts of things that Democrats could be doing in all these states, instead of whining about Republicans, whining about the Koch brothers, whining about Fox News. They could go on the offense instead of playing defense all the time by passing these things at the state level.
And of course, Stephen Hill, nearly a quarter of eligible voters, that's 51 million Americans, are not registered, according to a recent Pew Center study. And most of these unregistered voters disproportionately come from the ranks of racial minorities, the poor and the young, the very group that the Republicans are suppressing. So In other words, there's an awful lot of pickings out there to be had, right?
Well, yeah, and not only are the Republicans suppressing that, but flip it the other way. Those demographics, poor people, minorities, young people, for most part, are Democratic voters. So this is the ultimate irony here. If the Democrats were to pass something like automatic voter registration in California, not only would it be the good thing to do and the right thing to do and make us put us in line with the standards that are used in established democracies around the world, but it would also be good for the Democratic Party. I mean, this is the ultimate, I don't know what else word to use other than just stupidity of the Democratic Party, is that they can't even figure out how to do something that would be not only the good and right thing to do, but something that would actually be good for their electoral prospects into the future. And that's what, in the article in The Nation, pretty much all the examples I have are types of legislation and policy that the Democrats could do that would be both the good and right thing to do and would also be good for Democrats. And yet they're not doing any of it in these states in which that are completely under their control. This is the real baffling thing about the Democratic Party.
Well, it's pretty amazing that they're spending all their efforts, in courts and arguing on MSNBC about how terrible the Republicans are. And clearly, the Republicans are cynical, and all of their claims about voter fraud are completely bogus. It's worth noting that the purge in Florida only turned up, I think, about 100 anomalies in the vote. In other words, there are about 100 voters in all of Florida, most of whom are elderly people with green cards who thought that they were eligible to vote, but they're not really U.S. citizens, even though they've lived here for decades. It's all pretty pathetic, the arguments on the other side. You're saying is that there are ways to do end runs around this. And so if these Democratic states were to make it easy to vote in the way that the rest of the civilized world operates, including next door in Mexico, by the way, where you get a voter card when you turn 18 and it's tamper-proof and you have it for life. How do you expect this, though, to spread to the red states who, of course, would resist it, particularly those that have the legacy of Jim Crow and now what is called Juan Crow, the suppression of Latinos as well as blacks?
Well, you know, to my way of thinking, let's take it one step at a time. I mean, if we can get it passed in the nearly dozen states that are controlled by Democrats, that then becomes, at that point, it becomes, well, why aren't these other states doing it? It's just the fair and right thing to do. Even for those who are concerned about voter fraud, for example, that Pew study that you cited that's in the Nation article, they found that there were approximately 24 million inaccurate registrations nationwide. If we used universal voter registration, it would resolve all those 24 million inaccurate registrations. I mean, basically, by using universal voter registration, it removes registration from the contested field of politics. And that, because you're not arguing over who is or who isn't registered anymore and who should or shouldn't be allowed to vote, because everyone is registered, 100%. And so, for those who truly are concerned about voter fraud, and we realize that a lot of the Republican red flag around voter fraud is disingenuous, it's just an excuse to do the voter suppression stuff they're doing. But there are some who are generally concerned about voter fraud. And for those who are, universal voter registration, automatic voter registration is the way to deal with it. So that's where I think that, you know, if it was passed in a half a dozen Democratic states and working fine, then it would just be a matter of time before even some conservatives who are fair-minded would say, hey, this is going to deal with voter fraud much better than the attempts we're doing now. We're going to try it in some of our red states as well. So I think the idea would spread of its own merit, but the Democrats should move forward with it first and quit using Republicans as excuses for this kind of thing.
Well, just in closing, Stephen Hill, my understanding is that the Patriot Act that was passed after 9/11 has a provision in it for a national ID card, and it's never been enacted because there's a lot of civil libertarians have objections to it. The theory being that the fact that there are millions of Americans inside of America who are under the radar was considered after 9/11 a national security threat because most of the hijackers were able to get phony IDs, etc., and that was the impetus for it. Is there a possible political trade-off here between conservatives and progressives? In other words, if conservative defense or homeland security hawks, shall we say, want to know who's in the country and to have everybody have a national ID card, wouldn't it be worth it for progressive civil libertarians to accept that, provided it was also, this card was also a lifetime voter registration card?
I think that would certainly be a compromise worth considering, because the reality is, you know, many countries around the world who are just as respectful of civil liberties as the United States is, and in many cases more respectful, they do have national ID cards and they do have voter IDs and these sorts of things. And those are the method that is used to enact 100% universal voter registration. And so it seems to me that, yeah, of course, it's understandable why progressives and Democrats are fighting these voter ID laws, but that it would be interesting maybe to pick out a state and try a compromise saying, okay, you want to do voter ID? That's fine, as long as the government is going to issue a voter ID to every eligible voter in this state, and every eligible voter is automatically registered, and the government takes responsibility for 100% voter registration. It seems to me that that trade-off is certainly worth exploring, because the number of people who potentially could be disenfranchised by these voter ID laws is, any vote that doesn't get counted, of course, is not right and not good. But the number is actually not going to be that great compared to, you know, as the Pew study showed, we have 51 million Americans who are eligible to vote, and yet they're not even registered. So we're talking orders of scale, of magnitude greater, that by having a 100% voter registration approach, we would be enfranchising tens of millions of voters compared to the few thousand who might be disenfranchised by the use of a voter suppression voter ID law. So I think it's certainly worth exploring that, you know, okay, if the Republicans are going to have the vote in some states to push a voter ID law, making a compromise with them, okay, voter ID, fine, 100% universal voter registration as well, let's give it a try. I think it's worth exploring.
And what do you think can be done about the Electoral College? You started out the interview by pointing out that most of the country doesn't even know an election's going on. We already know what the results are going to be in most of the states. It's only the swing states where the money's being spent and where the vote counts, in effect. And a lot of these are legacies of this disproportionate rural bias that the Electoral College has. Is there any way, I know there were some efforts to reform the Electoral College. Where do they stand?
There is an effort, and it's going forward and making a great deal of progress. It's called the National Popular Vote Plan. Nationalpopularvote.com is the website for it. And what they have a very innovative approach here, because, you know, to get rid of the Electoral College require a constitutional amendment, which is very tough to pass. But their plan actually gets around the Electoral College without a constitutional amendment, because the states are allowed by the Constitution to decide how to allocate their state's electors. So a state, for example, could most states allocate them, the winner of their state gets 100% of that state's electors. But two states, Nebraska and Maine, actually, you have to win each congressional district, and each congressional district has a electoral vote assigned to it. Well, the National Popular Vote Plan says, it asks states to pass a law saying our state will give 100% of our state's electors to the winner of the national popular vote. And once enough states have passed that in aggregate have the 270 electoral votes you need to win the presidency, at that point it becomes a de facto national popular vote. And at this point, enough states have passed this law to have about half that 270. I think they're up to about 140 electoral votes. So states like California and Massachusetts and Illinois have passed this. So they're halfway there. And if they can get other states to go along with this over the next few years, it's possible by 2016 we will be electing the president using a national popular vote, a direct election of the president, which right now is not occurring.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Stephen Hill.
My great pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Stephen Hill, who's a writer, columnist, and political professional. His books include 10 Steps to Repair American Democracy, Fixing Elections, The Failure of America's Winner-Take-All Politics, and Whose Vote Counts, written with his friend Rob Ritchie, with whom he founded Fair Vote, an organization dedicated to reforming our elections to respect every vote and every choice through bold approaches to increase voter turnout, meaningful ballot choices, and fair representation. He has an article at The Nation, The Blue State Strategy for Progressive Renewal. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Michelle Manos. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where we welcome your comments. And the conversation continues online at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. I'll be back again at 11 a.m. on Sunday with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.